World Cup Talk. Christina here with the storylines that matter most in football today. That Spain story is the place to start today, because nothing changes the mood of a World Cup faster than the health of its brightest young star. The latest reporting around Lamine Yamal shifted from anxiety to relief ahead of Spain's match against Saudi Arabia, and that matters beyond one lineup card. When a tournament is built around young difference makers, even a small injury scare changes the emotional temperature for fans, opponents, and frankly for broadcasters who know exactly which faces are driving global attention. The bigger point is that this World Cup already feels physically punishing. Coaches are rotating more carefully, players are managing minutes, and every little knock is being discussed like it could tilt an entire group. Spain still look like one of the most watchable teams in the field, but the Yamal conversation is a reminder that talent alone is not the whole story now. Durability, recovery, and squad depth are becoming just as important as tactics. And Spain are not the only team where the body language around player fitness is part of the story. Canada got encouraging news with midfielder Ismael Koné rejoining teammates after his injury concern, which is a much bigger deal than it might sound at first glance. For teams outside the traditional inner circle of favorites, losing one central piece changes everything. Canada's margin is thinner than the biggest European and South American powers, so a midfield stabilizer returning to the group is not just a medical update, it's a competitive lifeline. What I find interesting is how this reflects the broader World Cup pattern. Middle-tier contenders need their first-choice spine available almost every minute if they want to turn good performances into knockout-round reality. Fans often focus on stars up front, but tournaments are usually held together by players in the middle of the pitch who keep transitions clean and calm. If Cone is really trending back toward full involvement, Canada's outlook gets more serious immediately. Then there is the weather and match management angle, which is quietly becoming one of the defining themes of this tournament. Lionel Scaloni's comments about hydration breaks changing matches might sound like coach speak, but they point to something real. These interruptions are no longer a side note. They are tactical checkpoints, recovery windows, and chances for teams to reset shape and energy. In practical terms, heat is starting to influence not just how players feel, but how matches are coached. A team with better depth can treat those pauses as mini timeouts and push the pace in calculated bursts. A team that is already stretched can come out of them looking heavy and exposed. For fans, it means the World Cup viewing experience is changing too. The drama is no longer only about goals and saves. It's also about who handles conditions better, who adapts quicker, and who can still think clearly in the final 20 minutes. That's a real competitive factor now, not background noise. You can connect that directly to what host cities are dealing with off the field. In the last day, there has been fresh attention on transit planning, security operations, and fan handling across North American venues. One report highlighted U.S. host agencies expanding services as record ridership pressure builds around match days, and another pointed to host city security measures ramping up, including anti-trafficking efforts around major events. This is the kind of World Cup story that is easy to underestimate until it goes wrong. Supporters remember goals, yes. But they also remember whether getting to the stadium was chaos, whether prices felt punishing, whether lines were ridiculous, and whether the city felt ready for the scale of the event. The tournament's reputation is being shaped not just by what happens on grass, but by buses, trains, policing, pedestrian flow, and basic comfort. When people say a World Cup is a national showcase, this is what they mean. The football is the headline, but the fan experience is the proof. That's why some of the more local stories are actually worth paying attention to, even when they sound quirky at first. Kansas City pushing a pet-friendly host city identity is obviously lighter than an injury bulletin or a tactical adjustment, but underneath it is a competition among cities to define what kind of World Cup memory they want to create. North America is not hosting this event as one uniform backdrop. Every city is trying to build its own personality, sell its own convenience, and make itself feel welcoming rather than generic. That can be good for fans, but it also raises the stakes. Once cities start branding themselves aggressively, expectations rise with them. If you market comfort, hospitality, and ease, you'd better deliver. Otherwise, the backlash is even louder. On the field, I also think it's worth watching how concussion and substitution conversations keep surfacing. Egypt using Abdelmonem as a concussion substitute during the match against New Zealand is one of those updates that might seem procedural, but it reflects a modern football tension that is not going away. The sport wants intensity, speed, and nonstop stakes, but it also has to show it is taking player safety seriously. In tournament settings where every match feels enormous, the temptation to push through physical warning signs has always been there. So when concussion protocols are visibly used, it matters symbolically as much as competitively. It tells players and coaches that health decisions are no longer optional theater. They are part of the structure of elite competition. That is a healthy trend, and honestly, one the sport still needs to prove consistently. Another thread from the last 24 hours is how quickly narrative can swing around teams after one result. Spain's emphatic win over Saudi Arabia drew a lot of attention, not simply because of the scoreline, but because statement performances at this stage change the conversation around pressure. A team can go from intriguing to terrifying in one night. At the same time, Iran's draw with Belgium generated a different kind of respect, with even the post-match details, like the team leaving a thank you note for Los Angeles hospitality, feeding the sense that this tournament is as much about emotional tone as raw results. That is one reason World Cups grip people differently from club football. Every match is a mood shift. Every result rewrites expectations. We are not just tracking points. We are tracking belief. And belief is also being shaped by the commercial and practical side of the event. Ticket access, travel costs, and venue geography keep hovering in the background of nearly every fan conversation. Even when the latest headlines are framed as venue guides or city spotlights, what supporters are really asking is simple. How expensive is this World Cup going to feel, and how hard is it going to be to move through it? A tournament spread across huge distances creates opportunity, but it also creates friction. That means organizers do not get much credit for the basics working. They only get blamed when the basics fail. Over the next few days, I'll be watching for more signals on whether transport systems, crowd operations, and local pricing are holding up under real pressure, because those details shape whether a World Cup feels joyful or exhausting. So the big picture today is this. The World Cup story is no longer just about who is playing well. It's about who is staying healthy, who is adapting to the conditions, and whether the host experience can keep up with the scale of the tournament. Spain's star scare easing is good news for the spectacle. Canada's midfield recovery update matters for competitive balance. Hydration breaks are becoming tactical events. Host cities are being tested as seriously as the teams are. And as always, the smartest way to read a World Cup is to notice the stress points early, because they usually become the major story around later. See you tomorrow.